Welcome to the Listics AFL podcast, where we analyse AFL list building, free agency, trade and the draft. We're also working to help everyone achieve their best possible mental health, and we'd like to acknowledge our podcast partners, Beyond Blue.
If you're feeling low, anxious, or you need to talk to someone, please contact the team at Beyond Blue. You can call them anytime on 1300 22 46 36, or visit them at the website at www.beyondblue.org.au.
Now, without further ado, I'm John Van Norden.
And I'm Sean Lewis, and it's Listics podcast time.
We're back, baby.
I know. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
It's seriously strange. So, hey, everybody. I know that it's probably been 12 months since. I reckon in that podcast 12 months ago, we were talking about how we were going to try to make more time to do podcasts last year. But new businesses,
baby. Second children.
life, hey?
Yeah.
We're back, though. I think probably this is a more, not yearly, not annually, hopefully, but more likely frequency for some of our future podcasts, at least for the next little while. It's going to be when we can muster the time rather than committing to a regular schedule. But I've missed it. And I'm lucky that I get to catch up with you anyway, mate. But for the sake of the listeners, how are you going? How's your mental health? What's been going on?
Yeah, look, everything's going well. Last time we updated, I think I'd moved house recently. We were waiting on our second child to arrive. That's now happened. He's now 10 months old. I've started a new role at work, which has been pretty time intensive. Second children, renovating houses, all the usual stuff that just takes up every spare minute of your time. I think probably one of the biggest things we didn't, I mean, in hindsight, you notice it, but you probably didn't realize it at the time. But yeah, when you go from one to two children, there's, you know, you go from having two on one to one on one, which means that, you know, you're constantly having to be, you know, looking after one of the children at one point, or prepping dinner or food or something, or it's all going well. Mental health wise, I'm in a great space. I've got a bit of paternity leave at the moment, the last bit of it from my company, but of course, being the company man that I am, I'm doing bits and pieces of work through it. Probably more to just keep myself occupied when the kids are in childcare and my wife's not here, so we kind of get a little bit bored. And that's kind of where we find ourselves today. I've managed to eke out, you know, kind of an hour and a half of the day to sit down and properly podcast with you. So
yeah,
feels good.
It does feel good.
How are you? How's your mental health?
Good. Mental health is good. I'm in a really great space. So I think there's thank you to all the people that have reached out to me or to Sean over the last 12 months as well. I actually found that probably one of my favorite things about not podcasting was people reaching out, saying about how, you know, we're always talking about our mental health and they hadn't heard from us for a while. They just wanted to do a check-in. So thank you so much for everyone that checked in. The truth is probably that our mental health was so good that we just didn't have the space for this right now. There's a lot going on in both of our lives. For me, I really committed last year to doing more of the things that I loved. And for me, that was volleyball. So for those of you that don't know my background, I played volleyball for Victoria, Australia a lot growing up, and ran my local club and was so involved in it in my late teens, early 20s. I sort of gave it all up due to injuries and a few other things, but was really happy to start coaching and start playing beach volleyball in the last 12 months, which is just, it took up a lot of my time. Funny coincidence, Jerry, who's my beach volleyball partner, ended up doing some work with Sean. So there was a couple of good connections there. I've also been looking to build a business as well. So that's been really exciting. And I'll talk more about that the next time we do a podcast. But it's needless to say, been a pretty busy time. We're both running it's the middle of the day, so we're both running this podcast on 100% sun energy, which is great.
Solar powered
podcast. So good work, solar power.
Do we pull out the phones and compare numbers?
Let's flop out the phones and measure them up.
No data of it. No, just.
What am I doing right now? This is like one of the fun things about one of the fun little projects we've been doing over the last 12 months is getting solar power installed, and Sean and I comparing energy production during the day. So I'm at 18.9 for the day so far.
Yeah, I'm at 16.8.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
I'm a star.
Are you?
Yeah.
What's your highest daily?
It's about the current export, not the highest ever, mate.
It's all about who can get to the top in
Tasmania. John's not actually in Tasmania, but he's almost there. And I think today, I mean, so sorry for getting distracted there. Today we really just wanted to jump back in and start with probably more of a general podcast. So focusing on just the changes. So we really love the off season. Not usually that's when most of our podcasts are. We're sort of coming in after the off season and into the preseason. But we just wanted to do a quick revisit of all the clubs, what's been happening, and just sort of give our very quick, better, worse, same, review of all of the clubs.
And I guess it's kind of a bit twofold. Like some clubs have potentially taken a step back, but with a longer term improvement, and some clubs in the vice versa. So it's, I guess we'll give our kind of thoughts on the improvement and how that relates to the club and their current goals. So, you know, you know, some clubs like, you know, Brisbane and Melbourne and the Bulldogs and that sort of stuff are probably more focused now, whereas your Hawthorns and Adelaide and stuff are probably more a couple of years away.
Maybe we'll do the review in terms of how aligned it is to their current stage.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's also that's with the fair view of the 23rd season.
Yeah, like that, it's only fair to review North Melbourne based upon their longer term trajectory, and it's only fair to review Melbourne and Richmond based on their shorter term trajectories. So that's how I'll do mine, but I'm going to pass over to Adelaide first for you. We're just going to go through an alphabetical order, but Sean, Adelaide, what are you thinking? Better, same, worse?
Well, I mean, anytime you bring in a player like Isaac Rankin, who we kind of very highly rate, I'd probably say your list is getting better. Do I think they're better in 23 because of what they did? It's probably going to be dictated by their injuries and natural improvement. I think, so I'd probably put them in, they're kind of holding. Yeah. I don't think they've probably in the 23 season improved, but I think longer term they've probably improved. So Max Michael Annerley, who was their father-son pick, he looks like a pretty handy player. I'd expect to see him at some stage this year. Obviously Rankin comes in, improved their depth with Tyler Brown. And then looking at what they've delisted or retired or traded, I mean, losing Billy Frampton potentially hurts their key stocks, but again, they've got plenty, so yeah. I'm not sure it's a real big damage to them. Losing Luke Brown plus Billy Frampton, I guess, in that key defensive stock area, maybe a bit more longer term, and obviously Fisher McCasey's stepped away.
Yep.
So you know, maybe that Billy Frampton trade looks different if they had have known that.
I think you're probably right there.
Yeah, I think, look, overall, I don't think they've gotten worse in the long term. They've definitely gotten better long term. 23 season, I'm not expecting, you know, massive jump from them. I'm expecting some natural improvement from their younger players to keep growing. I think they're also transitioning with Sloan, moving away from being captain, which is a really important next step for them as they set themselves up for the next flag tilt. They get their kind of longer term captain now, which is Jordan Dawson, the recruit from Sydney last year. But yeah, I'm pretty like where they're at is I just think they're just going to match. They might bump up one or two places this year. I don't think this is the step change year.
No, I'm the same. I think that internally they're sort of talking about it. There's a expectation that they're going to have to step up, but I haven't heard any clubs say the opposite of that. Maybe with the exception of Hawthorn, who seem to be pretty committed to living in the cellar for a couple of years. But like Isaac Rankin has to also be taken in the lens of it was probably Isaac Rankin or Bailey Humphrey, who would have been the equivalent pick that they gave to the Gold Coast. So he's also an exciting young forward. I think Isaac Rankin's the right player for them, so I don't think that they lost in that trade by any sense.
I think they didn't
drastically improve in that trade either.
Rankin's young enough that kind of they're avoiding the early kind of teething years. So you're kind of getting a player just starting to transition into that, you know, going from patchy to consistent. So, and I mean, they probably wary. I mean, they obviously paid a high price, but, you know, you take Jordan Dawson as an example. They had to pay for him after he'd have that step up year. So you imagine Rankin was pretty decent last year, but imagine if he had kind of that next step up year, they would have probably had to have stumped up two pick fives.
So, yeah, you're right.
I think it's good. On to Brisbane.
Brisbane definitely improved. So they were gainers from the off-season period. They were always going to be because anytime that you're towards the top end of the ladder and you get a free hit with a father-son, Will Ashcroft, best player in the country for his age. So what a win for them. Dunkley in a trade as well. They're looking to win now. So bringing in a player of his caliber is great. Jasper Fletcher at pick 12 as well. So they got two draft picks in that early group. Long-term potential midfielders, well, probably Ashcroft's a bit more than potential. He's already going to be there. But both before the pick that they would have had if they just took their own pick to the draft. Jack Gunston adds to that forward line mix. I think that he'll contribute in year one. Connor McKenna, obviously back from Ireland. And the players that they lost, like McStay, obviously going down to Collingwood, I think that he's more than covered by Gunston. Age difference for sure. If you could choose between the two on an age profile basis, you would take McStay. But Gunston, if you want performance right now, Tom Berry was depth for them, and he's gone for more opportunity. And the other guys are delisted or retired. So I think that they're probably far and away the biggest gainer for me, and I'm saying this with only having reviewed two clubs, but so I might change my mind by the end of it. But Brisbane, yeah, they come away looking like they want to be the club to beat.
Yeah, I think absolutely, they're 100% improved. So like, I don't think there's a question there. I think Connor McKenna is a really good pickup in the sense that Daniel Rich last year, I think, was the first time I've seen him start to show some signs of age. So just bringing a bit more, a bit more of difference to the back line as well. Obviously, Dane Zorko's not getting any younger as well, but they've got a natural replacement in Zach Bailey there as well. So you're right in saying kind of Gunston and McStay effectively neutral. I think that actually, I mean, it's effectively neutral from the type of players that they or the position they'd play, but I think Gunston is more suited to that position.
Totally.
Whereas McStay is probably, you know, the next forward. Like, he's better as a number two forward, whereas kind of, you know, Brisbane's got Danaher, Hipwood, and then it was kind of McStay third. And that third kind of tall role, I'm not sure he was fully suited to. He'll be very good for Collingwood because he'll go into that number two role, and that'll allow like someone like Majacek or something to play that three role, which I think will make Majacek even more dangerous. And you know, Gunston and Majacek have a lot of similarities, and that's really, they were looking for that number three, not a number two forward. And
yeah, totally.
So I really like that.
Hit up accurate goal kicking. And Gunston's done that, made a career of it.
Yeah. And it can get up and down the ground.
They create space in the forward line as well, because they don't need to lead at the ball and jump up. They can go sideways and create holes, knowing that they can kick goals from the pockets. So
absolutely.
Yeah, he's going to be great.
I think probably the one thing I'd say, and this is the, you know, Brisbane probably along with you know, you look at your top four at the moment, and Brisbane's one of them. They should be odds on to go for the flag. And the one thing I'd say is that if there's ever a justification for things we've talked about on our podcast in terms of, you know, protecting the first round of the draft, or even when it comes to father sons, getting rid of the discount. And then if it's a top eight team that's getting access to a top 10 talent, you know, they have to sacrifice their first pick, you know, that sort of thing, which is what we spoke about on the podcast. This is the reason why. Like, credit to Brisbane for being able to do it, but there is no way a team should be able to have two top 15 father sons and be able to trade out. I can't remember what they traded out for Dunkley, but I think it included two first or something. But there's no way a side should be able to, I'll just look up the Dunkley trade one point. They shouldn't be able to do it. Like, it just, there were
a lot of flaws in the system that were associated with that trade. I'm also pretty sure that they traded for Gunston so that they didn't lose their compensation for McStay, and that Hawthorn equally didn't affect their compensation, which is horseshit.
But that's been going on since it came in.
It shouldn't though. Like,
it shouldn't.
No compensation or. You can't trade free agents. You don't get the right
free agents. If you're going to do compensation for free agents, it compromises.
Just don't. You lose the free agent means they're not signed to your club.
The way the NBA handles it, with like that, the team that drafted you has the ability to pay you more.
Yep.
That is more a way to ensure equalization, because totally. if you had a loyalty allowance that sat outside the salary cap that enabled an extra couple of percent for the high end players,
yep,
and say you only allow a club to nominate, I don't know, top six players or whatever,
yep,
that would go a long way in terms of managing that, because I mean, I just, yeah. It's
there's plenty in the back catalogue. If people want to go back and hear Sean and I talk about this at length, it's very frustrating.
Lions trade pick 21, which I think ended up, I don't know if that was first or late second, like with all the compensation.
Yep.
Future first, future second, which meant they had to trade in a future second to trade their future second, and a future fourth. And then all that Lions got was a future third or future fourth. And that would be, I don't know. It just, like, just how do you trade away most of your picks and then still not be in deficit next year?
Yeah. I think the system sucks.
But good on them. Absolutely, 100%. They've done it within the rules. I am not criticizing the Lions. They have done it within the rules. They have played by the system.
Well done.
Exposed the system.
Yeah. Well done, Lions.
So well done, Dom, and the team up there. So we're all with you.
All right, rolling on, mate. Carlton.
Yeah, so Carlton, I guess the big ins here, I mean, they didn't have a, like, kind of the off-season they've had the last few years. They brought in Blake Akers in a trade there from Freo. I don't think it was much. They brought in Oliver Hollands as their early pick, which is good. He fits a need for them, so I like that pick. In terms of a really good small forward.
Oh, he plays wing as well. So he can start in that forward spot, but I think long term they'd see him in a wing position.
Yeah, I'm looking more at Carlton.
Yeah, what's happening right now?
Okay, so just framing it, Carlton are a team geared for kind of the next five years.
Yep.
So I would say that Hollands is probably the first two or three will probably do a bit of time up forward and maybe
high forward flank and then transition to a wing. Yeah, I agree.
So they got Lachie Cowan, who we both really like as well, at number 30. So that was a pretty smart pick. I don't think that they've improved in the sense of their list shape. I mean, they've delisted. They lost Setterfield in a trade, delisted Stocker, obviously. Nunes, who's kind of that depth, but that's okay because you need to start developing. Oscar McDonald as well in terms of that key position kind of depth. But they're not, apart from Setterfield, probably on the cusp of best 22 or kind of top, you know, best 25.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't really think they've lost anyone from the best 22 and they've brought in probably talent that'll be better in 3 years. The one thing I'd say for them, there. So I'd say stay the same for both this year. Slight improvement long term, not massive, because they've got a few older guys. But what I would say with them is that where they can make the biggest difference is in their injury management. And I know it's pretty kind of. Yeah, injuries can be freak or they can be sustained, or entrenched in the program. But they suffered injuries hard last year, and that's what cost them finals. I think they were one of the few that I think they were in the top four or five clubs for games lost from the best 22. So if they can have a marginally better year with injury, they will be better. And if they get some natural improvement out of their younger guys, they will be better again. Yeah. So if I was Carlton, I'd be bullish about top eight. And I think they can probably finish about six.
Yeah, I think that the purpose of bringing in Jack Nunes is sort of replaced by Blake Akers, who's a better version of that. Ex St Kilda running wings that can kick the ball really far. So Akers is definitely, that's the lineage. And he's an improvement. I think that I think probably this is one of the times I've seen them draft really, really well. Like Cowan's a great replacement for Williams and Saad long-term. He'll probably get the opportunity to replace Williams sooner with the injury. Oliver Hollands is a great long-term winger and they don't need any more inside midfielders with the list that they've got. So being able to have somebody that can come in and, as you said, play on that high half forward and swing onto the wing is great. So I think they've done the right stuff, but you're right. They're not markedly better. They're a little bit better. Do you want to move on to the Pies? I think the Pies are better next year, and I'll caveat that with the fact that they would have been better anyway with Brody Grundy coming back from injury, but trading Brody Grundy and then allowing them to bring in Tom Mitchell and McStay, probably the two that are going to slot straight into their best 22, was great for them. I think losing Oliver Henry is bad long-term. I think that they delisted some players that I thought had really good long-term potential. I think that they missed definitely on McMahon, but Poulter definitely seemed like he was somebody that anytime I watched him looked like he was going to be a good long-term player. So that surprised me, but no one's picked him up as well. So there may be something else there as to why. And Markov is sort of like a depth player. Ed Allen, good long-term prospect. Look, I think that they're... If somebody offered me a trade of Tom Mitchell and Dan McStay for Brody Grundy, I would prefer Brody Grundy in that trade. So I think probably in the net they're the same, but I think probably for their list build, they're probably slightly better.
Yeah, it's probably a good way to look at it, actually. I think it depends on where you view Collingwood are at right now. They're kind of a bit of a really hard team to read. I mean, obviously they were really successful last year when people probably didn't expect them to be. The question really becomes, and this is the trick that the list builders have to think about, is that are they really geared to win a flag now, or are they still kind of 3 or 4 years behind? Based on the fact that they went and got McStay and Mitchell, they probably see themselves more now than 5 years away. So with that in mind, trading Brody Grundy, massive risk. Like, let's put it out there. They're relying on Cox and Darcy Cameron, who've both had long-term injuries before. And that's it. Like, they've got rookie rucks after that. And, you know, it worked well last year, but teams have now seen that. So there's now 20 games of footage of Darcy Cameron and how he rucks for Collingwood.
Yeah.
And teams, just the same way as when, you know, Gawn took over from Jamar, had a really good first little bump, then teams got the vision and they figured it out, and then you have the little dip. You know, teams adjust, they're smart, they watch vision, they understand. So it's up to Collingwood's coaching staff to keep that adaptation and keep in front of the way people are going to come at them. And losing a guy like Brody Grundy, who has a super good hit out win rate,
yep,
is a big risk. But good on them; they've taken the roll of the dice. Tom Mitchell, fantastic, improves their engine room straight away. McStay straightens them up more. They were probably missing one key forward. Love it. Billy Frampton, another key defender. Good. You know, Ed Allen, think he's going to be early on. We'll see him for sure. And Jacob Ryan is a pretty good pick as well. I don't mind that one as well. So, I mean, I think overall, I'd say they're marginally better than what they were. I mean, yeah. Henry's the one that kind of hurts a bit.
Yeah.
Is he better than Ed Allen? Probably, in my opinion. Yeah. But I might like, it's very early, so
it is.
You know, it could quite easily be very wrong on that.
And I think as well, like, we always try to factor in the facts that each year you get draft picks. So Ed Allen or an equivalent player like Ed Allen was always going to arrive at the club if you took your draft picks to the draft. So crossing out that from the list, as in, say, Ed Allen and Joe Richards and Jacob Ryan picks 1, 2, and 3 in the draft, you're always going to get them. If would I prefer Frampton, Hill, Markov, McStay, and Mitchell to both Browns, Brody Grundy, and Ollie Henry? I'd probably still rather the latter. So this is where it's going to be, as you said, the interesting thing is going to be, did they get their window right?
Yep.
We'll find out this year. And if they didn't, then they've really missed an opportunity to get early onto that proper reframe.
But I love the risk. I do.
Oh, yeah.
I love it because...
Got to roll the dice.
They're probably one of the few teams that really put it on the line over the break. And so I love that. Richmond were one of the others. But so back them in. Love it. But again, you know, are they going to improve on last year? I'm not sure.
Yep. Essendon.
Definitely better long-term. I think Essendon's off-field changes are going to be what dictates everything. So if you look, they traded Aaron Francis. They lost experience in, you know, Smith, Hurley, Tom Cutler, and a few speculative picks in there like Josh Eyre, and that sort of thing as well. So I think, like, they've lost a lot of experience, so that they kind of reset. So definitely gone backwards. But I think in the long term, this is obviously the transition they're going to need to take. And as long as Essendon really need to stick fat with the coaching decision they've done. There can't be any more of this, you know, 2 years later rubbish that happened with Rutten. And that, fair enough, it could be proved to be the right call. But it's really hard to sit there and evaluate a coach on 18 months of performance.
Yeah.
And look, I know Melbourne's done it, and I'm not saying Essendon's wrong about it, but it's a very, very brave call to go that early on a coach. So there must have been some significant issues. So I think they've got a great coach in Brad Scott. He'll certainly enforce his standards. Whether they're higher or not, I don't know. They're another team that's undergone a captaincy change, a leadership change. So it's all kind of new. You might get the new coach bounce and then settle down. But in terms of what they brought in, Alan Davey Jr. probably went too late in the draft for where I had him. Funnily enough, he went super early in our keeper draft.
Super early.
Super early. Top 10 even. Yeah. So that's a wild thing. But anyway, Elijah Tastis, he looks like he'll be a fairly good pick. I was a bit concerned about the fit with Essendon, but, you know, I didn't watch enough probably last year to fully comment on it. Setterfield is exactly kind of the player they need. They don't really have a big bulking inside mid that's tall and rangy. And Setterfield finally probably gets to play the position he was kind of recruited from. Look, I think overall they've done pretty damn well with the hand that they had. And they obviously traded for Sam Wiedemann, who, again, provides a bit of depth. And, you know, as a Melbourne fan, I'd love for Sam to really break out at Essendon as much as... look, I'm willing to cop the crap from Essendon, my Essendon mates, that we let him go. Because I think, you know, Sam probably didn't get the best run at Melbourne, and I hope he gets it at Essendon. I think he's a super talent, so...
Yeah, I think I'm the same with you with Essendon. Off-field's going to be where it's dictated at the moment. I worry that some of the messaging that's coming out of the club still feels like it's selling seats, selling memberships, selling hope that they're going to win this year, and that's why the coaching change was made. It was performance-based. Which I just don't think is where the list is set up for. So I think that if you're constantly selling a lie, that you're just going to end up pissing people off and underperforming. So you know that I haven't been big on Essendon for a few years now. I haven't agreed with a lot of the changes that have been made with the team, with trades, with picks, with everything. But I think that this is a step forward in terms of the list. I think the list has more of what they need in order to take them forward long term. And you're right. I think that, I mean, any time that you bring in two Davies is a good draft, and add to that a top five midfielder and recycle players in Setterfield and Wiedemann. They're recycling people that are at the right age. So they recycled Wright and turned him into a club best and fairest winner. And he's been a really great forward for them in the last 2 years, and Gold Coast definitely could have used him. So if they can do the same with these guys, maybe they do fast track that rebuild by retooling with 23 to 25 year olds rather than 28 to 29 year olds.
Yep, 100%. So next up's Freo, mate, your boys. Do you want me to go first on this one?
Take him. Yeah. Take him away.
I think in the short term, you're going backwards. Long term, you're big winners is probably where I sit with it. So Akers out, best 22 player, probably lower on the best 22 list, but still a best 22 player. Blakely, he was delisted, got picked up as well. You lost Rory Lobb and Griffin Logue and Lloyd Meek. So that's three talls, and you brought in a star, but only one in Luke Jackson. I guess you brought in Josh Corbett, who's kind of that 192. So, yeah, we'll call him a tall. You obviously lost Mundy, and you traded Darcy Tucker as well in that Logue trade. So I think, look, overall, probably the loss of, you know, kind of three talls, especially like, so losing Lobb and Meek, who are both ruck backups, and you only really replaced it probably with Jackson. Long-term, Jackson's going to absolutely outperform both of those guys, not a question. I just think, yeah, like that depth, and especially with Darcy's kind of injury history, you know, hopefully you can keep Jackson on the park. He's shown pretty good durability so far. Hopefully Melbourne didn't jab him up too much. I thought, obviously, O'Meara coming in, that's a good win. And Josh Corbett, yeah, he's a pretty good pickup as well. So, I mean, there's some really good signs. So maybe, look, maybe you could even argue you're probably holding where you're at. But I probably see it more 23. You'll have a little bit of a dip with the experience lost. But then, yeah, I think long term, you guys are, you know, if you should be winning a flag in the next 5 years.
Age profile's right for a sustained attack. But I'm the same as you. I think that a successful year for Freo, and they'll say differently, but I think a successful year is 6th to 8th. If they come away, they lost a few spots on the ladder, but still make finals. That'll be the confidence they need to go ahead the year after that. We always say give trades at least 12 months to settle. Sam May at Melbourne. It takes them just
Stephen May.
It just takes them a little bit of time to settle into the system. So Jackson, they're going to have to take a little bit of time to work out how he's going to work and how Freo's system works and how it's all going to work with Darcy. O'Meara doesn't have the 20 years of history that Mundy had playing for Fremantle, so he doesn't intimately know it all. And although he's in the leadership group, being able to come in and, you know, perform straight away, it's always going to be a little bit harder. So I think the same as you. I think that the best case scenario for them is that they hold. What do you think about the Cats though? Because I mean, as much as I love talking about Freo and could debate this with you for a little while, I'm conscious of time as well. I gotta go in 25 minutes. So let's move on to the Cats.
It was interesting. We had this discussion on our chat group last night for Supercoach, and I think obviously everyone's looked at the off season that Geelong's had as the reigning premier and gone, "Geez, they've done well," and they have. But I think anytime you lose Joel Selwood, you haven't gone forward. I'm sorry. Like, you know, and I think that's a fair comment. I mean, overall, really, what have they lost? They've lost a lot of experience. So Dalhouse, Higgins, Selwood, and Narkle, all quite experienced. Narkle probably more depth, but still, I don't know, 60, 70 games or something. Higgins and Dalhouse probably more bit part players towards the end there, but still, again, a lot of experience. And Selwood obviously still performed at a super level last year for a player of his age. So they traded out Cooper Stevens. So that was, I mean, Cooper Stevens was brought in a bit like Jai Clark. I mean, he was a slightly later pick, you know, about 16-ish, 17. But he was, again, you know, highly touted local product of the Falcons and all that stuff. So I think it's interesting they've traded him. Because he would have been kind of their future midfield. But yeah, I think overall, I mean, they've brought in Bowes, Broon, Clark and Ollie Henry are probably the big ones to note. And I guess they're backing that the output of Bowes and Clark will be able to help replace the output of Selwood and Broon and Ollie Henry will be able to replace, you know, that kind of work that Dalhouse and Higgins were doing. So,
yeah, I think that's all fair. I think that if you're looking at this in a straight list build perspective, going, you want to always have a good balance between age groups. Geelong were the oldest. They lost their absolute legend in Selwood and replaced him with Bowes, Broon, Clark, and Henry. And that's good. Like, it's from a list build perspective, long term, it looks good.
So long term, they're better than they were last year, 100%.
Any team that loses Joel Selwood, though, is worse. So I understand exactly what you're saying. And I don't think that they'll be as good as they were last year. I still
think they're a top four side.
So same. But leadership is huge. Means a lot. It's underestimated in drafting. It's why people like North highly rated Will Phillips in the draft and went after him, because they're drafting a captain, and captains can elevate the performance of everybody else in the team. And Selwood was somebody who could do that, and he proved that again in the grand final. So I think they've come away from this looking great. But
during the situation, they have maximized the situation.
Yeah. They're one of the few clubs that constantly do that. I with the Cooper Stevens thing, I watched him play a couple of times. I don't think that, I think they probably realized that he wasn't what they thought he could possibly be. And Clark could be. Clark is a better prospect. And you've taken, you know, 8 picks higher, top 10 versus top 20. It does make a difference. Not where you're picked, but how good you are to get picked there. So I think better overall. But to be confirmed in terms of whether it's better this year. Gold Coast. I'll jump into this one. Gold Coast lost Bowes via a contract dump. Corbett, who's been great depth for them. Markov, again, great depth. Thompson, great depth. Jez McLennan never came on, was proved probably the danger of trading future picks to get access to a early second night draft pick in Jez McLennan. I think they got him with a 20s pick.
23, I think.
Yeah, maybe 23, but they traded like 26 and a future second pick, which it always looks bad in hindsight, and I don't think that I've seen a trade like that look good. Ian Hill was another one that was done with a trade like that to GWS. So I think that those, you should always worry if other clubs haven't been selecting them in the teens as well, that they're probably sliding through to the 20s because they're a 20s pick. They're not worth two 20s picks. And Rankin. So Rankin's the big one. Are they worse? Yes. Rankin's a star, and they would have been hoping that Rankin was going to be one of the players that elevated them to being a finals and premiership winning team. Have they done a good job of replacing him? Bailey Humphrey is a great potential player to sort of fill that gap. Depth in Blakely, Tom Berry, Jed Anderson, all really good midfield depth if they're going to rely on being a midfield focused team. Ben Long adds depth to that running halfback line, which has been decimated for them. So
he's probably an upgrade on Markov. Long,
I think he's an upgrade on Markov as well. I think that the depth has actually been pretty well replenished across the board. I think the hardest thing is just paying so much in terms of assets to get rid of Bowes.
I look at it and I go that what they've done is they've kind of looked at the. They reckon they're going to get natural evolution out of their probably best 22, so there's not too much they have to do with that. And they've just looked at the foundation of what's behind that, and they've solidified that. All of, like, Jed Anderson, Berry, Blakely, Ben Long, they're all better probably than the players' positions or the list spots they're taking.
Yep.
And so that way you're kind of...
raising the level of the club.
Yeah, you're kind of raising your floor.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think that's the best way of putting their off-season is that their floor's gone up rather than their ceiling's gone up. Their ceiling's gone up will depend on how much Anderson, Rao, these guys come on.
I'd say losing Rankin, and as good as Humphrey is, I mean, and I think this comes down to how you rate it. I rate Rankin so highly that I think your ceiling comes down because he was your ceiling. But that said, I think Bailey Humphrey is a wicked replacement. That is, you know, if you're going to lose a player of Rankin's quality, he's a good enough.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get enough out of him.
And the Bowes, look, the Bowes trade will be long talked about. But they were able to re-sign Anderson and Real to deals this off-season, which is part of why they dumped the money. So it's
and they've got to get money for, is it King next?
Yeah, so there's exactly that. We know why they did it, and we're seeing the fruits of that now. But it still was shit. GWS.
Yeah, so number one pick in Cadman comes in. They brought in Toby Bedford. And then, academy pick in Harry Ralston and some other guys there. Max Grzeczewski.
Maxie.
So obviously losing Tanner Bruin hurts. And they traded out Bobby Hill. But Bobby probably hadn't shown enough for them. I mean, he had a bit of a rough run last year. Well, it's probably an understatement. But obviously losing Hopper and Taranto. So... you would say that they've gone backwards for the loss of those two alone, and then losing kind of Hill, who had shown flashes, you know, probably, you know, in his, what he was doing for them was probably maybe in their best 25. His potential is probably in their best 15. And Tanner Brune, I think, is probably a bigger loss. He showed some pretty nice signs last year as being a future best 22 player. So obviously, losing a bit of future as well as now in Hopper and Taranto. But in a way, I actually think this works for them.
It does. It's just that they lost the, for me, in order for it to work for them to the largest capability, they lost the wrong players. Because you would, for me, I'd rather them have had Taranto and Hopper long term than Cornelio and even Kelly, like who were just.
No, so I'm of the opposite. I think if they could have kept Hopper, Taranto, fine.
Yeah, okay.
And then maybe Cornelio. But kept Hopper and Kelly. That'd be the way I would.
Yeah. Okay. Big bash and crash Kelly for the class. And you can bring in Tom Green into that midfield who can step in as well. So yeah. Okay. I understand what you're saying. Yep.
Yeah. I think it's just the combination of the two. And the reason I say Taranto would be okay is because they were never going to play him probably. The way he probably needs to be played.
Yeah.
Whereas Richmond will. So. I thought, I guess overall, one of the things since Cameron left is they've struggled with that forward line. So getting Cadman obviously helps, who's, plays in that real athletic key forward mold. That's really kind of helped there. They'll have Hogan again. Obviously, Toby Green down there. In terms of their profile and the shape of their list and the depth and where it is, it's helped them reprofile a bit because they were very midfielder heavy, which meant that guys like Taranto were playing as a third or fourth forward instead of playing in the midfield more. So I think that really helps them. And I do really like the Toby Bedford trade's a wicked one as well. I know Melbourne were pretty shattered to lose him. He showed enough last year to say he's probably a best 22 player. He's a small forward, but he can run for days.
Just at his hamstring, unfortunately.
I know. It's a real shame. I think he can be a real success for them. So I think that's a good pickup as well, because again, it addresses the small forwards where you've lost Bobby Hill.
He's better than Bobby Hill.
Probably. Yeah.
He's an improvement on Bobby Hill. Maybe not on draft pick status, but in performance for sure. And if that, I'd say the general comment that I have with GWS, which I hope that they can correct in the coming years, is that they as a club have used way more draft capital than any other club in the last 10 years. I know that they started with a lot of picks, but they every single year get themselves in a position where they've got a fistful of picks and they consolidate it into one or two and they don't pan out as good as they should. So there are a couple of things there that they can improve on, probably talent identification or player development or coaching. Like you never know which one of those three things it's going to be.
They got
a new coach. So we've answered that part of the puzzle. But I need to, for them to take that next step forward, I need to see them transitioning more of the picks that they're bringing in into star best 22 players or regular best 22 players rather than just disappearing in 2 years' time.
I think what's really important for GWS this year is to consolidate. They've still got a pretty handy list. I think it's worse this year than it was, obviously. But if you can consolidate and set a base level with your playing group this year, like say they finish 10th, that's fine. That's your base level. We only go up from here. They shouldn't be going backwards from wherever they finish this year.
Yeah,
it's probably my opinion. So
I agree with that.
We're gonna keep cracking on. We're up to Hawthorn.
Time, we're gonna have to cut them even shorter. So we'll just pound through them a minute per club. Apologies for the back clubs.
Better or worse?
Better for the build that they've got. Drastically worse for what's going to happen to them in the next 2 years. I would be very upset at the deepness of the cuts and also the spin behind the deepness of the cuts. So the messaging coming out from the club being like, we want to rebuild differently. We're not going to go down the Geelong Richmond model of trying to continue to top up.
We're gonna do the Melbourne 2011 model.
You did do that. Yeah, exactly. You already did do that, and it didn't work. And now you're gonna do the Melbourne model, which is gut the list and enjoy the seller for a few years, as I said. So yeah, I think that they've got some players that will help them long term. I actually really like their drafting.
Yeah,
but they're cut too deep.
Yeah, so I 100% agree with you. So McKenzie, Weddle, Hustlate, I think all great picks. Lloyd Meek, depth in ruck, and especially losing McAvoy, fantastic. But you're right, they've lost. Like, when you look at what they've lost, Gunston, Dan Howell delisted, that still baffles me. Ben McAvoy, Tom Mitchell traded, O'Meara traded, Phillips delisted. Like, that is, and Liam Shields retired.
Shields retired, yeah.
Like, you know, that's a 1,000 plus games of experience just walking out your door. Yeah. You are going to be significantly worse next year. And I don't care how good a coach Sam Mitchell is, you'll see light every time you can, but it's significantly worse, and it's significantly worse for the next few years. And then you'll get better.
So I'll take Melbourne like you did with Freo. You can back me up.
Hit me.
Melbourne better this year, worse long term. Brody Grundy is a gun. Lockie Hunter is the exact type of midfielder, if I was going to bring one into the Melbourne midfield, that you would go after. Jefferson is a really smart long-term pick. Shacky is great depth. So I think that all of the moves that you made this year are really good for only losing one best 22 player. It just so happens that that one is probably the person who was top three in terms of scope with Luke Jackson. So hard to swallow losing Jackson, but the output that you're going to get this year and next is potentially another flag. So it's could work well.
Yeah. Look, I think it's a fair assessment. I think, yeah, short-term better, long-term probably slide. I think the one thing I'd say is that I was thinking about it the other day. So if you look at the contracts that, you know, or you look at the age profile of like Track and Oliver and that sort of stuff and Viney, and you obviously Jackson's kind of 6 or 7 years younger. Grundy is maybe 1 year, 2 years older than those guys. So, you know, in terms of sustained success, Grundy will help keep us going when those guys are still at the peak of their powers. And I think that's where that trade kind of will balance out. Once they're all gone, we're stuffed. So put a fork in us, we're going back down the bottom. But no, look, I mean, Jefferson's great pickup, and obviously Jacob Van Ruyen as well, for developing long-term up forward.
Yeah, so
I'm pretty happy with where we're at, but your comments are absolutely fair. Bang on.
Yeah, I totally, like, what it's done is create redundancy that if Max Gawn got injured, you would still have an absolute gun premiership ruckman ready to go. So you guys are fine. North Melbourne, take us through.
Yep. North Melbourne, essentially, obviously Horn Francis out. But apart from that, we're looking at predominantly depth from the list. I mean, Josh Walker, delisted, didn't fit your profile. Anyway, but you've turned Horn Francis into Sheasel and Wardlaw. And then you've brought in Griffin Lowe, who I think is a better age profile than Josh Walker. And Tucker is good depth as well in his role, or potentially start as a best 22 and then move into being depth later. I think you've actually, strangely enough, and this is, I'm going to say you're actually better.
You're better. They've gone forward.
But it hurts me because we don't know what Wardlaw and Sheasel are going to be like. But Horn Francis had some good games, but not.
Theoretically, they're better. They've made good calls. I think Braden George is another great long-term player who probably without injury would have been a top 15 pick. So it's been, yeah, smart moves that look like they're going to pay off long-term. But let's see in reality.
I think probably the best thing about these moves is they admit where the list is at. Yep. Like, it's the first time I've seen, like, North have done some deep cuts, but they've always kind of been a bit confused. This isn't confusing. This makes sense. What they've done is what I felt they should have done for the last 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. So I agree with that.
Good on them.
Port Adelaide have lost an absolute legend in Robbie Gray. And a couple of other players who have been useful depth for them. I mean, sorry, Carl Amon was a clear best 22 player. But Motlop and Mays have been useful depth for them over the last 2 years as well. And bringing in Jason Horne-Francis is always it's always a good year if you bring in a former number one draft pick who's only a year into his career.
Yep.
And bringing in Junior Rioli as well, which really offsets Gray. And not because he's anywhere near as good as Gray, but because he's worse than Gray, it makes them better. He should be a forward only, and Gray had the potential to go on the ball, which kept people like Rosie and Butters off the ball for just those extra few center bounces. And those guys are the future. So this is the right step forward. And as I said, coming away with Jason Horne-Francis at the end of it, it's a win.
Yep, agreed, mate. Good assessment. Richmond, I'll make it simple. They're better in the short term. Not that they've lost a lot.
I don't think they're better. Listed. Better full stop.
Well, I think the picks that they've lost will make them worse in the long term, but I don't think that really matters because their window is now.
Yeah.
So Hopper, Taranto, the inverse of what we said, obviously, with GWS. They've picked up two guys that plug and play straight into the midfield. Taranto will get to play the role that he's best at, which is that attacking midfielder, freewheeling, getting forward, booting it around. And in Hopper, they get a much more reliable Dion Prestia.
Yeah. They got the dual meatball sub going through the middle now.
It'll actually be funny watching those two. I wonder if they actually ever smash into each other.
There'll be a collision, meatball collisions going Napoli sauce flying everywhere.
but then in terms of delistings, they've Kane Lambert retired. But other than that, there's nothing. Shane Edwards as well, but
Shane Edwards and Caddy, they're on their last legs. All of those guys weren't performing anymore. Collier Dawkins didn't come on like we thought that he would.
Yeah.
And Sydney Stack, with Will
Martin and
Stack. They didn't live up to where we thought they could go.
They're better for the next 3 years.
If you're going to market to bring in players. To help you win right now, and you get players that are also the age of Taranto and Hopper, you've done well. Most people come away with 28, 29 year olds. They've come away with 24, 25 year olds, which is a great place to be in because if it doesn't work, these guys are still going to be around in 5-6 years time. So that's.
Yeah, I think it's a three. I think it's really a now thing. They're trying to get another flag in the next 3 years and then it's all
then
done.
Then you can do what Hawthorn did with Tom Mitchell. You don't get a flag, or you do, and the team breaks up, ship them off to somewhere else for picks.
St. Kilda, go for it.
Saints are worse.
Are they? I reckon that the players they've delisted barely played because of bloody injury. I think just...
But you're right, sorry.
Got players on the park, isn't it?
You're right, they did barely play. Ben Long, good depth. Jared Lean at good depth. Dan Hannabry... needed to get that contract done. Paddy Ryder injured a lot towards the back 2 years, but better when he played. Geary, absolute legend of the club, but replaceable in terms of performance.
Yeah.
Mateus Philippou as the top pick, and Ollie Houghton. I like both of those picks. So I think they've brought in some good players through the door.
Isn't Keeler? Keeler's a very similar style to Ryder as well, from memory.
Yeah, so
he's an athletic ruck.
So I think that but they didn't do anything. Like, they just used the picks.
Well, they didn't have much to do with apart from the one pick that they had.
Totally. And Zane Cordy's a fine free agent to come in as well, just to add some depth. He might even be best 22. So I'm in general fine. I just don't think that they step forward.
Yeah, so the Saints' improvement is only going to come from better injury management. Part of that is getting rid of injured players, which they've kind of done, but they're only going to get better through injury management and getting people like Hunter Clark and Nick Caulfield back will help as well. But they've got probably the makings of a top eight side. I don't think they've got a flag side there. They got Ross the Boss back. Hopefully they can. They got their fitness guru as well. Oh, I can't remember.
Okay.
Whoever it was. Yeah. So hopefully things sorted out. It might take 2 years though. So
yeah, it'll take 2 years for sure. So let's see what happens at the end of next preseason. That might be what's more determining of their success.
Sydney worst, stay the same. I'll do this one actually.
No.
I reckon they've stayed the same. I don't think they've improved. Sydney's improvement comes from their players. Last year they had a super run with injuries. And you know, that's part of how you get to grand finals is having a bit of luck or really good management of injuries. And last year I think they were second least games lost from best 22 players. So you know, if they can keep up that, then they'll absolutely be in contention. But the way to obviously take the next step is that they need more natural improvement. So
one player. I'm not giving you the 1 minute mark. I'm holding up one finger. It's the truth is that the improvement on this list comes from one individual, Will Gould, in the best 22.
Is that your
get him in there?
Your Easter egg that you had in that photo on Twitter?
Yeah, exactly. Will Gould. Look, I don't like his chances. I thought he was going to have a bigger year, but
he won their best player of the VFL.
But they've just renamed their leadership group to have like three senior defenders again. So he's relying on pushing one of them out. So let's see how they go. Yeah. But get Will Gould in the team. West Coast.
Just before you jump over, just quickly, I mean, the reason why I think they stay the same is, I mean, they lost Josh Kennedy. And they've lost two ruck depths in Naismith and Sinclair. But apart from that, they haven't really lost anything. Constanti is a good pick for the forward line. They need more pressure there. You know, having another person other than Papley. So I think he's and for super coaches, I expect him to probably play early. And I thought that, apart from that, Francis intercepting defender, if they lose Lloyd, probably, you know, that's what he's there for. But again, like, you really, they've lost a lot and there's nothing coming in, but you know that there's so much improvement on their list, so you probably say stay the same.
West Coast are worse. They've lost Josh Kennedy, who's an absolute legend. Jack Redden, who was a good midfielder in the flag. Junior Rioli, another player in that performance age bracket. But they're on the right track. So
I don't understand, like, don't get me wrong, Jaden Hunt's a good player. I don't understand how he fits their list moving forward.
Yeah, I don't either, but I think at this stage of a club's rebuild, they start to take punts on a few players that haven't quite lived up and are around 23, 24. Because if
Jaden Hunt's like 26, 27.
Oh, well, he's got 3 years to turn it around. I thought he was maybe 24, 25. But their draft was good.
He's 27.
Okay, so he's older than I expected. Kobe Bergeyle, Gimby, Hewitt, Noah Long, all players that I think will Harry Barnett, long-term Nick Nat replacement in a ruck. So I think that their draft was good. I just don't think that they're going on the correct path for them. Western Bulldogs, take us home.
Oh, okay, because you're in a rush.
I'm in a rush.
Yeah, okay. So I think they got better. Losing Dunkley is hard to replace. However, their biggest problem to me was in their defense, and they've gone out. They've got Liam Jones as a free agent. They're able to retool Josh Bruce to go back where he started his career. They brought in Buslinger, who's a high-end centre-half back, third interceptor type player. So that's three key defenders, or two key defenders, plus retooling another one, and they're only able to retool the other one because they brought in Rory Lobb. So again, fix straightening him up, another key forward, natural development, Jamara, Sam Darcy, that sort of thing. They get their second ruck who can work with English. I think Lobb and English are very complementary. So I think it's a great thing. Obviously, they've lost Josh Dunkley, and that hurts. And they lost Lockie Hunter, and that hurts. I think structurally, this is a better change for them, though.
Yeah.
So
I think they're worse and they're better.
I think if you put it on paper and tried to trade it out, you would say they're worse.
Yes, exactly.
On the balance, but in terms of their overall balance of their list, they're much better because they had too many midfielders.
Like Collingwood. Like Collingwood, they've risk But some of the things that they've done address needs, and they really did need Lob. A player like him is exactly who they need.
And they absolutely needed Liam Jones.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And they've drafted for the future. So, like,
they've made all good calls. It's just that you'd never want to lose Josh Dunkley. So,
and you don't really want to lose a Lockie Hunter either.
No. And they lost Hunter for not much. So, that's an unfortunate one. But if they ever live up to this potential, like they did 8 years ago now,
yeah.
They'll be a threat this year. So,
This year will be a good year for them, I hope.
Yeah, I hope so too.
You know,
I've got to run.
John. It's
love podcasting
lovely.
With you again, and maybe we can sneak another one in over the next couple of weeks or next couple of months. We can't make any guarantees, but we love being here, and thank you again, everybody, for reaching out to us over the last year. We wish you all well. Wishing our thoughts are always with you and with your mental health. And always feel free to reach out to us if you ever need to chat about anything. Thanks again, Shawnee. Love your work, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Johnny Boy. Thanks, everyone, for listening. See ya.
If you constantly worry that the worst is going to happen, you're not alone. 1 in 4 Australians will experience anxiety. Know when anxiety is talking. Visit Beyond Blue to start a life beyond anxiety.